But what if something happens to all those specimens in Kew and in our own botanic gardens in Australia or in seed banks around the world? Well, if there is some kind of disaster, Cary Fowler and his trust can come to the rescue at the most unlikely place.
Well, we are trying to conserve all of the biological diversity of agricultural crops, and we're trying to do it forever. So we're putting together a global system for that purpose of a network of gene banks, seed banks, that will essentially conserve this seed, mostly in a frozen form, with a backup, a safety net, if you will, an insurance policy, in Svalbard, Norway, near the North Pole, in the middle of a mountain.
In the middle of a mountain, I see. It's going to be a sort of strong room down below, nice and secure.
There will be a James Bond movie there someday.
James Bond movie, okay. Now, it surprised me to learn not long ago that if you look at the cereal crops, there are remarkably few that we actually depend on. There's just a small handful of regular crops. Is that right?
That's right. Well, there are 10 or 12 crops that supply most of human nutrition, but there are about 300 crops that have been grown and traded worldwide throughout history. But we really depend on just a handful.
And why do you want to store them? Is it that they're so restricted genetically, like maybe bananas or was it carrots, that you're worried that if one big disease goes through them, they're gone?
Well, most people don't realize there's a constant turnover of varieties in the field. So a wheat variety might last for 10 years, and then we need to put a new variety out in a farmer's field. And that's because pests and diseases are not in the business of becoming extinct themselves. They're always mutating, figuring out a better way to attack the crop. And plant breeders have to intervene. These are domesticated plants, so their evolution is in our hands. And plant breeders, wheat breeders, corn breeders, potato breeders, are working on new varieties all the time to get out there, to be more productive or to combat the latest pest or disease, or just to figure out a way to help the crops adapt to climate change.
Has it been straightforward collecting the samples that you need to store?
Well, hardly. There's some hundreds of seed banks in the world. They contain a lot of diversity in the form of seed, which they're freezing. But we've constructed this backup facility, and we're trying to get all of the unique diversity up there just in case. And just in case what? Well, I don't know. Natural disasters, human error, equipment failures, civil wars. Seed banks get in the way. And when that happens, we can lose diversity. Not losing it like you lose your car keys, but losing it like the dinosaurs are lost, extinct.
Do you have to have a relationship with various countries so that they provide their seeds on a kind of official basis? Or do you just phone your mates around the world and they send it in an envelope?
No, unfortunately, I wish we could do that. It has to be pretty official, and some countries get very uptight about sending seeds abroad. They regard their agricultural heritage as their national patrimony. But we're offering a free insurance policy for them, no exchange of property rights, so countries that send their seed samples up to the North Pole with us, they don't transfer ownership in the process, and it's a free gift to them, a free insurance policy. And we think that diversity up there, of course, is what's going to help agriculture adapt to climate change and feed a growing world population.
Countries have the right to draw on the bank, do they?
We don't want countries or individual scientists going up there requesting materials straight from that source. We really function as a backup. So a plant breeder that needs breeding material for a new program, we go straight to the gene bank that supplied the material to the seed vault near the North Pole.
Yeah, I remember doing something on the Science Show via the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew, with which some of our botanic gardens in Australia have a relationship, where we provide some of the zillions of different plants we keep discovering in hotspots, for example, so that, you know, especially in Western Australia, vast area, so that they've got a bank, but you're doing it specifically for crops, so that that's more refined.
That's right. And you have a number of seed banks in Australia. One I visited recently was in Horsham, which deals with cereals and other crops. So this facility in northern Norway near the North Pole is really a backup for places like that.
Sure. What's your specific role in this?
I'm the head of the Global Crop Diversity Trust, and we're structured as an endowment fund. So we're sort of the catalyst for putting together a global system, crop by crop, for conserving the diversity.
Before that, what was your specialty in the field?
I was a professor of environment and development studies at the Norwegian University of Life Sciences, and before that, authored the first UN assessment of the state of the world's crop diversity.
How much is the public aware, do you think, of what might be the fragility of the crops upon which they rely so much?
Almost not at all. I think as long as shelves are fairly well stocked in the supermarket, everybody assumes that everything is okay. But we have to realize that what's in the supermarket really depends on a fairly fragile and narrow genetic base. And if we don't conserve that base, we run into some deep, deep troubles. I mean, these agricultural crops are domesticated crops. Their natural selection, if you will, is in our hands. So we know from Darwin's time, actually, who, you know, the first chapter of Darwin's Origin of Species was on variation in domesticated crops and animals. He understood that what you need, if you're a crop, is you need variation, you need natural selection, that's in our hands as plant breeders, and you need time. Unfortunately, we're in trouble in all three of those areas.
Yeah, one of the problems is that the F1 generation, if you like, the one that gets a sort of hybrid, has a sort of vigor, but the next one after that, it's got bugger all vigor at all.
Well, that's right. I mean, farmers typically don't save their seed or don't save it for very long, and with hybrids, don't save it at all. You have to realize that agriculture itself is fundamentally an artificial system. It's not nature's way to plant vast acreages of single crop in straight rows. It just doesn't happen. So we have to be careful about how we manage that part of the ecosystem.
Final question, is any particular variety or crop being elusive for you?
Well, the minor crops, the ones where there's not a lot of commercial interest, are typically crops that are where the diversity hasn't been in the field, hasn't been very well collected. And you might have some crops which have no plant breeders at all working on them, quite literally. In particular, some of the root and tuber crops that are important for poor people, cassava, yams, taro, these are crops that I really feel for.
Carrie Fowler is the executive director of the Global Crop Diversity Trust, with a special vault near the North Pole. Who'd have thought? Right next to Father Christmas. Next week, the Science Show goes to the Leaning Tower of Gingin in Western Australia and drops balloons of water with the chief scientist, Penny Sackett, on catalyst, droughts, vitamin C, and what Paul Willis has in common with Sherlock Holmes. That's Catalyst ABC One at 8 o'clock on Thursday. Production by David Fisher, Russell Stapleton and Nikki Phillips. I'm Robin Williams.